All right, we are up. What's up? Thanks for checking out another episode of the Grindworks podcast. This is episode 35. I just wrote it down. 35. With Carlise. Most of you might know him as Mantis. Mantis Tattoo. Mantis 813. Is that right?
That's right.
All right. Cool. I just had to get Carlise's last name because I didn't know it, but it's Carlise Fizers. Basically wanted to chat with you. I know you through riding bikes. A lot of people probably know you through the tattoo scene. And, you know, we got some unique circumstances going on in the world right now. So, kind of all around just cool place to start. And, I don't know, I'll kick this off with, I know you through riding at, like, Peach Plaza and the Wheel Mill, and periodically at places like, probably Boyce once or twice, but, other than that, I mean, we don't really know each other too well, so it's kind of cool, to do one of these and realize how many things that you should overlap on and you don't really.
Yeah, definitely.
But, yeah, like, when? How long have you been riding? And how?
Well, that's a hard question. I would probably say I started, like, trying to do tricks. It had to be around 1980, you know, somewhere around there, maybe, possibly, you know, to where I tried to figure out how to, like, bunny hop and jump and, you know, kind of get a little loose a little bit, you know?
Yep. Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I have, like, a pretty hard date in my head for when it happened for me. But it's because my grandma lived on the neighboring property to the local trail. So it's, like, when it went from me riding, like, the curbs out front to going down to the trails and calling things BMX. Like, I have a firm spot where that started happening. And
I'm sorry, I was going to say, I would probably say then if I had to, like, say when I considered myself to, like, be a BMXer, it would be around, probably around 82 or 83. Mm-hmm. I was really starting to get into it, you know, a little bit of skateboarding, a little bit of bike riding, you know, a little bit of everything.
Yeah, that's cool. They're usually pretty close together anyway, in the scheme of things, so.
Definitely.
Any, like, particularly interesting circumstances with when you're, like, getting into it that really hooked you one way or the other? Because I know that you ride a lot of flatland, right? Yeah. A lot of your stuff is flatland-inspired, at a minimum.
Yeah. Without a doubt. Well, I grew up in Florida, so, you know, it's flat there. So you kind of work with what you got, you know. A lot of my friends back then, we all rode a little bit of everything. So I think this style of riding now suits my age a little better than trying to ride other ways. You know what I mean? So it kind of keeps me in the loop without taking myself out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, not to put a number on it, but if you started riding in early 80s, are you pushing 50?
I'll be 50 this year.
Okay.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I'm, you know, grandpa age for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome, though.
Thanks.
It's always sweet to see you and, I should know your buddy's name. I always forget your buddy's name at the wheel mill. What was it? Okay.
Yeah, Dave.
Dave.
Yep. He's 50, so, you know, we're both, you know, we're the gray hairs.
No, I'm always stoked to see you guys there, though. I feel like on a personal level, I relate to your guys' riding a lot more than I relate to a lot of my other friends at this point.
I feel the same, you know, when I see you ride. I'm like, yeah, you know, I like what that guy's doing. You know, Not that I don't like what other people are doing, it's just, I appreciate it, because I know it's harder than it looks, You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and it's like, I don't know. I don't like to use the term as like an insult, but a lot of people are very cookie cutter. Oh, and yeah, it's like, you can watch them roll in and you're like, bar spin, feeble hard, and he's going to tail whip that quarter. All right, cool, end a run, wrap it up. Great, we could have predicted that 6 times over. So, like, I don't know. I like to just do whatever I'm feeling, and it's always felt like you're in that same boat. Like, you're riding for you, which is awesome to see.
I agree. I you know, I kind of feel the same when I watch you ride. It's the same thing. You know, you can tell you're there to do your thing. You're not really there to be part of any crowd. You're just there to do your thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Definitely not trying to impress anyone anymore.
No. If it doesn't impress them enough that I'm pedaling around at 50, then, you know, they can take what they get.
Yeah. No, that's awesome, though. Why'd you leave Florida? When did you leave Florida?
I moved here around 2002. And the reason was my wife is from here, and she kind of, you know, trapped me and, you know, brought me up here.
I mean, there's worse places.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, I mean, I couldn't end up somewhere where there was no BMX scene at all.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's cool, though. I figured there's either school or a lady or some combination of both.
Yeah, it's usually how it goes, though.
Yeah, seems like it. Do you have a... I mean, you've seen tons of eras of BMX, so, like, when we're talking about bike riding and everything through the time, like, obviously you've had tons of friends come and go from riding. Probably different groups of people you choose to ride with at different periods in your life. You said that you primarily choose, like, your flatland-oriented style now because it suits you. Were you always that way, though? Or, like, was there a time where you were kind of more of a ramp and park trick guy or something like that?
I could say I was kind of a little bit of everything, you know? Back in the day, I rode a little bit of ramps. Not much dirt jumping, because there really wasn't much dirt jumping where I lived. But I did, you know, a little bit of everything. That's just kind of what you did, you know? Took a couple good hits, a couple good wrecks here and there, you know, and decided to just slow it down a little bit. I was really getting heavy into my tattoo career, and you can't have broke hands and tattoo. It doesn't really work out too well.
Yeah, yeah. any of your upper appendages, really.
Yeah, starts definitely.
Because I have a good buddy that tattoos up in New York State, and like, his favorite trick to do is bar spin fakie, and every time I'm just like, dude, you don't ride all that much, so, like, just coming out cold turkey and slinging the bars is kind of risky, isn't it?
It's real risky, but if he has it like that, you know, hey, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah, yeah, well, and if that's what you love, like, you can't not do it, but it's,
Definitely, it's hard not to.
I'm always just like, man, that's like high risk for you, but I guess it doesn't really matter sometimes.
Yeah.
And then...
gotta take it, you know? See what happens.
Yeah.
Hopefully you land on your butt.
Yeah. And then you started getting into tattooing. How long were you into tattooing before you started taking it seriously?
I always took it really serious,
okay,
to be honest. I started tattooing at the end of 95. And the people that gave me a chance to teach me and, you know, mentor me and all that kind of stuff, you know, I really didn't have a lot going on at that time. So without that, you know, I don't know where I'd be. So I really took it serious. You know, I seen it as a chance to get my life together and just kind of get my ass together, you know. It was one of those things I seen as a good opportunity, and I took it.
Yeah, that's cool. Because I know, like, I have a couple friends. The one I already mentioned, like, Did you start out kind of like on the back end doing like your at home stuff and then get in through a shop, or did you kind of always stay on what everyone would call the right path of like, you get in as an apprentice and you work through that way?
Luckily, I got in as an apprentice and I always kind of stayed that path. The guys that taught me owned quite a few tattoo shops between the two of them from New Jersey to Tampa, Florida. And, they were that old school style. They really didn't want to teach me, but I kind of weaseled my way in, man, and they were stuck with me. And after that, it was on.
Yep. That's similar story to what I've heard too. Is like, basically if you just hang around long enough, it's like, all right, let's see what you got.
If you put up with enough shit, for the most part, they,
Take out their garbage enough times.
exactly, wash enough cars, get enough, laundry, groceries, whatever you gotta do.
Yep. Yeah, but it's all good though. Like, there's not
Oh, definitely.
those internships like that build so much character that you don't really think about until like you look back on it. 'Cause in the
Oh,
moment
yeah.
you're like, I'm just doing all this person's like crap work. And you are. But it's also like, I don't know. I've worked at big companies. I've worked at small companies within engineering, and it's like there's a certain character model that you get out of working at small companies or in probably tattooing field that you don't get at like a large corporate company, such as like take your own trash out, and when something needs to be cleaned, like. All right, well, one of us has to do it because there's only four of us here. It's not
Exactly.
like, oh, I made a mess. Janitors will get it later. You're the janitor too. Like, you gotta kind of chug through some of that stuff. And,
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to
oh,
cut you off.
no, I was pretty much done with that. And just like, that's where it would tie into the apprenticeship too, is like you're learning that you're responsible for all this stuff, not just the
Definitely.
tattooing.
Not just the art, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I that you know that was one of the most I don't know if I would say character building things, but like one of the most important things I learned was how to respect other people's things and I don't know, like be responsible for other people's things and feel a sense of pride in that. It wasn't just about me, it was about all of us as a kind of a unit. It sounds kind of corny, but that's what it was,
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think it's corny. Maybe other people do, but I guess maybe I've also been around it for a while, even though like I wouldn't consider myself much of a tattoo guy, but that's okay.
Don't have to be a tattoo guy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some
Although
tattoo guy.
I'm not bear, so like I guess I'm a tattoo guy, right? If you have
Yeah.
one, you either have one or
Yeah.
you don't.
That's it.
So, no, that's cool though. Like, so you started down in Florida then, and then
Yeah, I
ended up
started in
this way.
Tampa, Florida.
That's awesome. Do you notice different, like, I guess this is a question for both disciplines, riding and tattoo then. Do you notice different styles in both? In different areas of the country.
Definitely, without a doubt. I've noticed it actually almost anywhere I've ever gone and visited. You know what I mean? From art to bike riding to music to kind of everything. It's wild how much has changed in just a little bit of distance.
Even, I mean, accents is a great example too.
Oh, it's crazy.
You can go two towns over and you're like, what are you talking about?
Exactly. Oh, man. It took me a long time to understand what people were saying here, and I'm sure it was the same for them understanding what I was saying.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, Pittsburgh's weird. There's just a lot of weird dialect here. 'Cause I'm not from
It's.
here either. I'm
Yeah,
from
where are you from? New York?
yeah, Binghamton, New York.
Awesome.
just outside of there, but so it's like 5.5-ish hours, 300 miles northeast of here.
Gotcha. Is your family there?
Yep. My family, my wife's family. So my draw here was work.
Gotcha.
And only really because I had friend, well, so the company I work for now sells their products. So I knew these people from doing different tests and stuff for them.
Gotcha.
So kind of, that's the short version. But yeah, that's how I ended up here.
With the family, you know?
Yep. But now, like, as I've got the child now, it's kind of tough not being up there. The family wants to see him. You know, we could use the help occasionally.
Yeah.
But it's cool. Man, I'm like, I just keep looking down because I wrote notes and sent them to you. And now I'm like, trying to follow to them, but I don't know. It's kind of weird to me. I've never written notes ahead of time for a podcast before and stuck to them. Let's put it that way.
That's all right. As long as you don't start asking me about the Lion King, I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, no, I'll just throw some real weird stuff out and... No, it's the Tiger King, right?
That's what it was, the Tiger King, not the Lion King. Some type of king.
I haven't watched it either.
I watched a little of it, man. It was hard to watch. It's too close to home.
Florida home or Pittsburgh home?
Florida home, yeah. I know quite a few of those guys, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I think we went to high school together.
Yeah, I have not paid attention to that, and I'm enjoying all the memes about it.
Yeah. There's some good ones out there, man.
But at that point, I'm like, I'm not really sure I need to watch this. I think the memes are telling me everything that I need to know about that show.
I think the interviews with David Spade are the best. You know, he interviews pretty much everybody on the show, so if you watch that, you pretty much
all right. Just a... So, yeah, I didn't know David Spade was involved, so maybe there's some value to it.
Yeah, I'm hoping he does, like, kind of a Tiger King, Joe Dirt sequel something, you know. I can see it in the future.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I'll be down.
See, we can talk about Tiger King. It's just whatever.
Yeah, I know it. Sure. I did it to myself.
All right. So I skipped over the second question that I sent you because I figured it's kind of easier to ask at the same time. So we have a little bit of background on your riding, a little bit of background on tattooing. What is the like involvement in the scene like for both of those, and like do they tie together that much?
They actually tie together quite a bit. There's quite a few really, really good tattoo artists that are amazing BMXers. It's amazing how many there actually are. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I just think it's, you know, it's one of those things, you know, art, bike riding, music, they all have always kind of gone together, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They kind of go hand in hand. Just, you know, free thinkers. You know, people that kind of, you know, do it for themselves, not into team sports, you know?
Yep. Yeah, I know a lot of skate guys, BMX guys, and then, like, music scene guys that... It seems like those three go together really well for artists. And then, I mean, I knew that they tied together a little bit based on who probably some of your clients are, that Mason's been apprenticing through your shop as well, Mason Ritter. Yeah. And then even back a couple of years, you sponsored our Street Jam.
Yeah.
So, like...
Yeah, I mean, you know, I try to do what I can. You know, I'm kind of outside of the loop as far as the Pittsburgh scene goes. So, you know, I don't really have the draw as far as bringing people out here as much. But, you know, I still try to do what I can, you know, just try to stay connected to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Done a few art shows at the Wheel Mill, you know, this and that.
Yeah, and it's, what is it, your shop's on Route 30 in Greensburg, right? Is it technically Greensburg, or is
it's technically Greensburg. It's right before the Z&M motorcycle place. It's like a big Harley-Davidson shop.
Yeah.
Right on Route 30.
Yeah, anyone going to Peach Plaza, it's on the right as you come out of Pittsburgh and cruise on 30. But, yeah, you recently moved. What was that? Was that 3 years ago now that you moved, or is it two?
Oh, man, good question. I'm thinking three now. And we moved like a mile down the road. We were on the same side of the road, just a mile down.
Yeah, just right. Before you were, if you came off 66, you had to turn right. And now, yes. If you come off 66, you turn left. 66 exactly. South.
Yep.
Yeah. Whenever I would come after work, it's when I had to go either direction there off 66. Which that's probably how I'd come now too.
Yeah.
Now that I'm up in New Kent.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was just orienting a little bit. But what is that outside of Pittsburgh though? Is that like 50 minutes for you if you shoot down the city, or is it an hour?
It really just depends on which way you go and what time of day it is. I mean, I can get to the city pretty quick, just depending on the day. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But, you know, give or take 30, 40 minutes.
Okay, so you're not that far removed from the scene then. It's just...
Not real, but...
But there's plenty of other viable artists, too.
Exactly. And also, if you ask people in the city, you know, to them, we're out in the sticks, you know?
Yeah, that's fair. with that said, how is the tattoo scene? Is it kind of tight-knit like BMX is, where, like, you can kind of go anywhere and you're, like, in, or is it extremely territorial? Is there a lot of friendship in there, or is it kind of like, you know, stick to your lane, bud, type thing?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I'd say a little bit of all of those. Back in the day, it was a little more secretive. You know, they really didn't want you to know as much. People weren't as friendly. Now the information's out there, so there's really nothing to hide. You know, so they, you know, people seem to be a little bit more, I don't know. You know, they're not as secretive as they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're a little friendly with each other.
Okay. That's cool to hear that it's, like, at least moving that way. But I could definitely envision it being any of those different options just based on, like, I don't know. I mean, you're not sitting in another artist's parking lot sniping their clients, but it could always appear that way. Just in friendly conversation, you know?
Oh, man, you know, I mean, even in the 80s and 90s, it was still pretty bad. I mean, you know, it was very territorial. A lot of gang influence, a lot of... I don't know what it was exactly. Just not, you know, savory characters, I guess I should say.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? A lot of people were involved in the tattoo industry that really shouldn't have been involved in the tattoo industry.
Okay, I mean, It sounds like it ties right in with the stereotypes, models, and stuff that everyone would say about tattoos in general then, from at least that era.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, you know, you couldn't just open up a tattoo shop anywhere you wanted back then, you know. A lot of times the options were bad neighborhoods or bad parts of town, and, you know, things happen there. You know, so you just kind of had to be a lot more careful than it is now. You know, people now are kind of superstars. Back then, you were kind of like, we don't know if he's a criminal or if he's an artist.
Mm-hmm. Or a little of both.
Yeah, well, a little bit of both, or, you know, whatever. Whatever. Naruto.
Yeah. No, that's a cool answer, though. Like, that it's a little bit of all of those. Because I always felt like BMX is totally different than that. Where it's like, you can just show up in a town and you're, like, instantly friends with everyone there. Just because you ride bikes.
For the most part, yeah. I mean...
And again, that's probably my era. Like,
yeah.
I don't know how it was back in the 80s.
I think in the 80s it was more you were just shocked somebody else had a BMX bike. You know what I mean? So it didn't matter if they knew how to ride it or not. You were just happy they were there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it definitely got a little clicky for a while, and I'm not saying it isn't still, but, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, towards the end of the 2000s and stuff, you know, you definitely, when everything started breaking off into I'm this, I'm that, you know,
it got a little boring. The death of the all-around rider.
Yeah, it definitely, you know, it took me out of the game for a little while. I wasn't digging that vibe so much.
I know what you mean. And that was really probably my, like, prime riding years would be, like, the late 2000s.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I get it. I fully get it. It was when everything was going, like, beyond rideable, too. Whereas, let's make everything so light that it's literally dangerous for you to ride. And that's never been my scene. I'm a bigger dude. Like, I can't ride your twig bikes.
Hey, man, you know, you gotta ride what you ride, you know? I mean, and that's one of the wonderful parts of, I think, BMX is it doesn't matter as long as you're comfortable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, people started making it matter, but it doesn't. You know, it's just what you're comfortable on, man. Even if you're doing it on a tricycle, man, if you're having fun, who cares?
Yeah, that's, I mean, all the scooter kids, too. Like, yeah, I get it. You're here to have fun. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if I was a little kid, I would love to have a scooter, too, you know? But, I mean, I'm not, you know? But I'm not a big man, either, so I don't need a mountain bike, you know?
Yeah,
so that's
yeah.
That's why I ride my next bike, you know? I'm in the middle.
Well, and, like, I mean... If you handed me a scooter, I'm sure I could have fun on it for 10, 15 minutes, but, like, it's definitely not going to be my go-to. I'm not going to stop riding over it.
Well, I mean, you know, and even in, like, the 80s when they had those scooters that came out, everybody wanted one, everyone was riding them, but it wasn't like people were riding that down the street. You know, they took it as, like, let's play with this for a couple hours and then let's go back and be serious. You know what I mean?
Yep. I had an idea and a question and it just slipped, so whatever. oh, okay. That's what it was. So we were talking about that late 2000s vibe and everything. You know what came out of that I really don't like? Was the, like, over-uniformity in BMX, where, like, every single part looks exactly the same.
Yeah, I agree.
And, like, there's a lot of dumb ideas and a lot of dumb things that have come out, and, like, alright, whatever. But at least you're, like, trying something. And I've always appreciated the art of the BMX part, and, like, the only company I can think of that's remotely doing their own thing and doing their own ideas right now is Nowhere.
Yeah.
Out in Nebraska. And, like, you don't have to like it, but they're doing what they think is cool and they've got something different. So, like, I think that's cool in and of itself.
I agree. Anyone is doing their own thing and it feels genuine, then I think it's right. You know, whether you're doing it for money purposes or fame or just trying to get more kids to buy your product or not.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just doing it for you, I think that's a really cool thing. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah. But I thought that tied in with the art aspect too, and maybe why that era didn't quite feel right to you. And it could have just been subconsciously. Like, everything was too uniform.
You know, I don't know what it was. Maybe it was just wasn't riding very good then. You know what I mean? Maybe that's
what.
That's
fair.
I took a big break, you know, for a while, for a few years in the beginning of my tattoo career. I mean, I still did a little bit of flat land, but I really didn't ride any ramps or anything at all. You know, I mean, I pretty much stayed away from anything that was going to really hurt me.
Yep.
And then slowly, you know, here and there, I got back into it. I lived in Jacksonville for about 2 years, and I started going to Kona quite a bit, and I built a ramp in my backyard, and it's been on pretty much ever since, you know, back to full mode.
Living in Jacksonville and riding Kona quite a bit would be cool. I've been there one time. I think my session lasted under an hour. Just we were driving through, and I'm like, I have to stop.
Yeah, the sessions always look better in videos because a lot of times they let people ride more of the park when they're filming than mm-hmm. they do when they actually let you in. So that was always disappointing, but, you know, it is a great place.
Yeah. See, I didn't... There were, like, no restrictions as far as I could tell when I was there. But that was also 3-4 years ago. Maybe it's just relaxed now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sure things have changed a little bit since the last time I went.
But the funny thing to me is that park is surprisingly bad. As far as the transitions go, like... You see clips and everything there, and you're like, this place looks so good. And then you go there, and you're like, ooh, that thing is rough.
You can tell it was built by a lot of people back then that didn't know what the hell they were doing. They were just pouring molds and riding it for the most part, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it gives you a fresh perspective and, like, way more respect for some of the stuff you've seen there, too, though. When you first try to ride their big tombstone thing, and you're just like, wait, people do stuff on this. This is awful.
That thing is so scary. I think that every time I've been there, I look at the stuff, and I'm just like, I cannot believe that Van Homan got this, or Nate Wessel landed on this roof, like, that easily. I can't even touch this roof of this gazebo right now. You know, mm-hmm. it's mind-blowing when you see it in person.
Yeah. Now, that extension was the one for me, though. I was like, because you look at it, and you're like, wait, it definitely goes like this before it goes to vert. And then it's curved. Like, in no videos and pictures do you realize that it's curved.
Yeah, this is true. It's gotten worse over the years, too. You know, I mean, it isn't like...
Yeah, stuff settled. It's just so funny, though. That was probably my favorite part of going there, was realizing how impressive a lot of the stuff that you've seen on that ramp is. A lot of those ramps.
If you ride there at night, when the sun goes down in Florida, all the metal ramps over on the, like, park area,
yeah,
they get this weird dew on top of them, so it's kind of like a sheen of water, and it's so slippery. It's the worst thing ever, man.
I can imagine that. That happens at some of our local parks on particular nights, not every night. Like, Penn Hills is a good example of that, though.
Yeah.
That park will turn into a death trap out of nowhere.
That place sometimes is slippery as hell, man. There's, like, a weird slime over everything.
It's Penn Hills.
Yeah. I still like it,
though. I like it, too. It's actually one of my favorite local parks. Not because it's particularly good, but you can kind of move stuff around and make it what you want. So if you're not having fun there, it's because you aren't creative enough, probably.
I agree. I've never understood the concept of not having fun anywhere, as long as I'm on my bike for the most part. You know what I mean?
Yeah, or if I'm not having fun, I'm just going to go home and try another day.
Exactly. If it's just not my day, I understand that. But, I mean, you know, I'm one of them people, and I'm sure you can relate to this, but I can have fun on a curb, a piece of wood, a tire, whatever. You know, just give me something. I'll play with it.
Yep. And most of the time, I used to make this joke about one of our local parks back home. Actually, our only local park back home. That was a public park. But like when people would want to go there, I'm like, no, I'll just go down and ride the curb, like down at the plaza instead. I'd way rather do that. Because the park was really bad. Now, not living there, every time I go back, I like to get, you know, 45 minute to an hour long session there because it's wonky. And it's like, I'm so glad this isn't my local park anymore because I can actually appreciate it now.
Yep. I know that feeling. Anytime I go back home to Tampa, I go to some of my old local spots and I'm like, man, if I could just have this in my backyard, it would be so awesome. And it's like really nothing, but it's so much fun. You know, I just think about, there's a lot of memories there, I guess. You know, that's what it is too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And that's, there's a lot of value to that. And there's also a lot of like cons to that because you can end up going to a spot and every time you ride it, it doesn't live up to itself in your head. And sometimes you gotta like check yourself over that and be like, look it, you like this spot for this reason. Like the fact that you're like 10 steps beyond that and you're riding now doesn't mean that it's not a good spot. It's just that it's not for you anymore. And like, that's cool. But I don't know. There's like a handful of spots that I can relate to that on. I don't know if you have that similar experience with that or not.
Yeah, I guess, you know, a few places here and there, but, you know, I'll ride just about anywhere. I'm one of those people, you know, I'm not that picky. You know, I guess I should be, but I'm not.
No, I think you're happier when you're not that picky. It's like,
I don't need a perfect setup, you know what I mean? I don't, you know, I can make something happen.
Yeah, that's good. So you want to talk about what's going on right now?
Sure, why not?
All right, how long has Mantis been in business as your own tattoo shop?
2004,
so 16 years.
Yep.
Or pushing 16, depending on when you opened.
Yeah, it was like the beginning of 2004, so okay. I would say rather, you know, give or take.
Okay, that's awesome. Is this your second location ever for Mantis, or did you move a couple of times in that?
No, second location ever. We was in the original location like 14 years, I guess, something like that, 13 and a half, 14 years.
Awesome. That's cool. Did you rent it the whole time?
Yes.
Okay. I'm assuming you're rent.
I was going to say, I'm not a very handy person, so I'm not planning on buying a building that I have to fix, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair. Well, that already answers the second part of that question. I'm assuming you're renting the next, or the current place as well.
Yes.
No, I know how that goes. sometimes it's just better to rent. And if you have to walk away for whatever reason, then you don't own a building.
Exactly. It's a lot easier, you know. You gotta go.
So we're I think everyone that is gonna watch or listen to this is in the same boat as pretty much we are, but we are 3 weeks into Pennsylvania ordering the closure of all non-essential businesses. And I think it's exactly 3 weeks. It's March 16th was the date that they ordered that.
Yes.
So that would be tomorrow. Would be the third Monday after. With that said, there were waiver options for anyone that wanted to continue working. You know, if you were like a solo business, something like that. There's a whole bunch of like options. I think they said they got 10,000 waiver requests in the first day after they issued that order.
Wow. I did not know that.
So that's why they pushed it back. You remember they made that order and it was supposed to be effective like a Thursday or something. Or they ordered it Thursday, supposed to be effective Saturday at midnight. And then they pushed it till Monday at 8 a.m. just so they had time to go through all the waiver requests.
Gotcha.
But like, I guess there's twofold on this. There's what were your thoughts immediately when that happened? And, you know, obviously both as like a rider, on one hand, it's kind of cool. As a business owner, probably less so. So I'll let you go from there.
Oh, man. Well, as far as a business owner, I was already kind of planning for this because I seen it coming, you know what I mean? I was paying attention to it before they made us do it. I had already pretty much shut the shop down about a week and a half before they told us we had to. And I was only working by appointment, not letting the general public in. You know, it is what it is. You know, I feel like I'm in a good enough place as far as, you know, I have some money set aside, so it's not going to affect me that much in the beginning, but I think in the long run it might, because people are going to have less money and they're not going to be thinking about getting tattoos, you know, so that's a hard side of it, but that's a side of it I think everybody's dealing with in their business, you know?
Mm-hmm. When you're shutting down to appointment only, how much does that actually decrease your, like, foot traffic in the shop?
Well, it does a good bit as far as, like, people setting up new appointments and people coming in and getting piercings and, you know, just coming in and, you know, checking out the shop. You know, we have quite a few people that come in throughout the day and, you know. So, it does affect us, you know, and we're booked usually anywhere from 3 months to like a year, depending on which artist you're trying to get an appointment with. So it's really going to back us up, you know, because we had to cancel all these people. So we're going to have to make room for all these people. So, you know, which is awesome if a lot of them still want to get tattooed, and hopefully everybody's still around to get tattooed. You know what I mean? That's a downside that I don't like looking at, but, you know, it's reality.
Yeah, no, I understand. That's what I was kind of just curious what that meant for your business. I guess it would also impact, like, you're tattooing this person, but they come in with their two friends to watch, and you're just like, no.
That happens a lot. You know, you get, like, whole families, you know? And, I mean, we get it. You know, I mean, we are kind of the family business, so I get it. You know, I get that, you know, people want to invite their grandma and their mom and everybody, but I think we might have to change some of our rules of the shop a little bit, you know, and kind of cut that back a bit, you know, just like I think a lot of businesses are going to have to kind of restructure how they do things, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, the follow-up to that last real question was, like, what are your thoughts now as we sit here, you know, 3 weeks deep, knowing that this is at least continuing through the end of April? And, you know, then you also hear, like, kind of the murmuring of, like, as late as July, August, or, I mean, realistically, I don't think anyone knows, because it depends on when we reach the max point of the curve and start to decline before they're gonna lift anything.
Yeah, it's a scary thought. I don't, you know, I try not to think about it, to be honest, but I mean, it's hard not to, you know, I mean, I don't think it's gonna go away anytime soon. That's just, you know, how I feel. You know, I hope that doesn't happen, but I don't see this going away in like a month or two. You know, it's going to have some very long-term effects, you know, whether people are sick or just, you know, just all the mental and physical trauma it's going to cause to America. You know, I mean, America's, and the whole world, I should say, is, you know, it's going to take a long time for everyone to get back on their feet.
Yeah.
You know, tattoos and my type of business are one of those things that are kind of low on the totem pole as far as, you know, people getting back on their feet, which I understand that. Mm-hmm. You know, and and it is what it is, you know, I mean, we'll just have to keep going, you know, make it work.
Yeah, well, and getting back on their feet is a good way to put it, because everyone else wants to say return to normal, and it's like, I don't think anyone is returning to normal, probably, after this. I think we might see some variation of normal, but, like, if everyone just returned back to the way things used to be, that would really surprise me.
I agree with you. I don't really see it going back to normal anytime soon. And, you know, I mean, I hate to say this, you know, because I don't like being negative, but I mean, this is just, you know, kind of a wave of things to come. You know, I mean, this season's going to come back around, you know, mm-hmm. just like the flu season and everything else. You know, as soon as everybody gets well, boom, it's going to be back. And then what are we going to do?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's scary right now. You know, it's a scary time.
Definitely. Especially, like, I don't think it's going to have probably, like, long-term effects on your type of industry, but I would think that it will probably to, like, resort towns and stuff like that. Big picture, like, let's be realistic here, whether it's the beach or like a summer camps of any sort to even like a skate park business, indoor park. I can't imagine after a month and a half of like living basically quarantined life that as soon as we would get a green light that, okay, you know, return to the new normal, like, I can't imagine parents just going, all right, gonna drop you off at summer camp or take you to the beach now. Like, you're gonna continue on this cautious curve, or that's at least the expectation.
You would hope that would be one of the first things on parents' minds, but I'm not trusting all parents to be that smart, man.
I don't trust most people to be that smart. I mean, let's be real here. A lot of them are my friends, but look at all the people that are still out riding every day in large groups around town. Like, come on, man.
I would love to be out in a group right now with all my buddies. And
well, heck, know, yeah, me too. But yeah, I also have a wife and a kid to come home to.
I can't bring it home to my wife, you know, and I can't bring it home to the people I love, and I don't want, you know, who knows, I don't know if I have it, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. I don't want to spread it to somebody else. I don't want to be responsible for that.
And so the thing people don't realize, like, you hear the 6 foot thing, right? Like, oh yeah, maintain 6 feet of social distancing. Yes, that's not like 6 feet and you're good in the clear all the time. That's like, if you absolutely have to be out in public, maintain at least 6 feet. Like, and that's worst case scenario. And there's,
I agree 100%.
People are just not thinking. And look at, I, as a bike rider, the fact that all these places are closed is phenomenal and amazing. And I'd love to go get some sessions in. But
oh, yeah.
I can also step aside and go, don't let your pride and selfishness get in the way.
That's a good thing, man. That's a good way to think. I wish a lot more people were thinking that way. The couple times I've gone out, I've definitely made sure there was nobody around. If there was anybody even close, I just kept driving. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? I got a couple solo sessions in here and there, but even then I kind of feel weird about it. You know, I almost feel like, should I be out having fun when other people can't? You know, so
yeah,
it's one of those hard things. You know what I mean?
Well, that's as soon as it started to move towards like, hey, it looks like they're gonna shut some stuff down. I built this little bank to sub box in my backyard, and I'm like, I need to have something.
I know, like, I want to ride that thing.
When we're all free and clear, it's here.
All right.
But no, I also needed it because, like, Ryder's been going to the wheel mill a ton, and he's been getting really good and comfortable on his bike. And I'm like, I got to keep this going.
Yeah, you can't take it away from him.
And, like, he doesn't get why he can't, like, go to the park or go somewhere else. So even the neighborhood kids here, like, just wave to him from the road, dude. Like, after all this is said and done, hopefully you can go play with that kid.
Exactly.
But again, what is normal going to be? We just have no clue.
We don't. You know, we definitely have no clue. You know, things are going to change a little bit. For sure.
And I think, like we were just talking, you know, our friends are still going out and riding in large groups or something. I don't know if you follow him, but, like, Montana Ricky has been posting stuff up, like, dude, you guys aren't seeing this. Like, we're seeing this out in Jersey and, like, New York City and stuff. Like, just stay home. Stop riding with your friends.
It's funny. I just had that conversation with my in-laws at dinner right before we started doing this podcast.
Yeah.
I was saying that. It's like, you know, it's hard where we live because we're not seeing our neighbors being carted out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're not seeing the tents full of people. We're not seeing the freezer trucks full of people, you know. And I mean, you know, luckily it hasn't happened yet, but if people keep going out, it could happen any second, you know. And I mean, I just don't understand why people don't get that, you know.
It's just, this disease is like a perfect storm, right? Where, like, it takes at least 2 weeks to start realizing you have symptoms. It's super contagious. So, like, if every day you're out, you could infect up to 10 more people. And you don't even realize that you're doing that. And then they can continue on for 14, 15 days and infecting 10 people each day. Like, that's why this is going to go...
That's why I've had a really hard time understanding why they haven't made it, like, across the board. These are the rules. You know, this is what you have to do in every state until we get this under control. I think they're letting a lot of, you know, states control too much stuff right now. And I'm not saying take our rights away, but at the same time, sometimes we need to be told what to do. And right now, we're just kind of like... You know, everyone's on their own. You know, it's kind of like you don't know what to believe. You don't know who to believe. You know, we need a list of rules, you know, and we're not really getting a list of rules, you know.
I think they're hoping that we just do it in good faith, right? Yeah. But to some degree, that's just not reality. Like, everyone's selfishness and pride is going to take precedence to... Like, if I have the option of going out and doing something, or the option of my business staying open, like...
They're gonna do it.
Yeah, of course you are.
Yeah, it's...
And there's way too many situations of, like... Machine shops are a great example. When you look at that list of businesses, machine shops are explicitly not allowed to keep operating.
Mm-hmm.
Now... Let's say machine shop A over here. My hand, like, every time I go over here, I'm off my screen. I can't see it.
I got you.
So, machine shop A here makes all sorts of stuff for a bunch of companies, and maybe they get one contract a year from Philips to make a medical piece.
Yeah.
They can continue existing and operating because they occasionally make a medical piece. And it's like, no. Here's the reality. Your business is shut down unless Philips gives you a contract for that piece, in which case you come in with the people you need to make that part, and you get that job done, and you move on.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, just because you occasionally make this thing, keep your entire building staffed with all the people making widgets for other companies that don't matter. Like, that defeats the whole purpose. And I, on one hand, I get it. Like, if you can stay open, you want to. But you're not helping.
No, you're not helping. And, you know, more than likely the people that are making those decisions are at home. You know what I mean? Or mm-hmm. they're at somewhere safe, you know, and they're sending other people to work, you know, and that's, you know, it'd be one thing if you were staying open and you were the only one there doing all the work, you know, mm-hmm. putting yourself at risk. But it's another thing when you're putting families and other people at risk just for your own whatever, you know, whatever selfish needs.
Yeah. Well, and like my company, there's five of us that work in the entire building. Mm-hmm. And myself and another employee have been told to work from home anyway. Just, you're capable. We don't really need you here every day. As long as you're getting the work done, we'll let you know if something comes up and I need you to come in. In which case, it's 15 minutes down the road. No big deal at all.
Yeah.
And then another one of our employees has just had back surgery. So she's out on, you know, recovery right now anyway. She's working from home, but she's recovering. Yeah. So there's effectively two people in the office. One on the lower floor, one on the upper floor, and they have two different bathrooms. Like, those two people can continue existing there, and I don't think there's any contest. Whether we yeah. should be open or not, it's pretty irrelevant. It doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah.
We're not the topic of that discussion. Now, restaurants are one of the ones that's like a real gray area to me.
It's a scary one, you know? I mean, I understand people need food, but, you know, it seems like you're asking for trouble. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's one of the things, you know?
Exactly. One, it's sketchy. You know, what makes it safe? I don't know. Nothing. But, just the fact that they get the exemption, and like every restaurant has that exemption, yeah. just seems kind of wrong to me.
Well, that was kind of going back to like what I was saying. I mean, I think there needs to be like, you know, four cases like this, like a mandatory handbook or something. I don't know, you know, something that says
yeah.
these are the type of businesses that can be open, and that's it. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, and it's grocery stores and pharmacies, period.
You don't get to sue us. You don't get to do anything. You know, you have to close until this goes away, you mm-hmm. know? And for some reason, not everybody sees it that way. You know, they
yep.
still want to be able to go where they need to go, you know?
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know how you resolve it.
I don't think we do resolve it, but, you know, if things keep going this way, I think nature might resolve it for us. You know what I mean?
I haven't checked it super, super recently, but give me 2 seconds and I'll tell you what the national numbers are. U.S. has 335,000 cases right now. Just shy of 336, actually. So, I mean, as expected, we've superseded Italy. But Italy's tiny and we're a huge country. But we have, man, what are the, you know what the number that I'm interested in is? New York City. New York City has, give me 2 seconds and I'll pull this up. I just want the count. What is the count? Right here, county by county breakdown. Okay. New York State has 122,000 positive cases.
Damn. Yeah, like I said, I have been trying not to look, man. It's so depressing, you know?
Yeah. Okay, Westchester County, 13,700. Suffolk County, 12,400. Rockland, which is down there, 5,300. Richmond County, 4,291. Queens, 21,400. Nassau, 14,400. Manhattan, 9,900. Like, Kings, 18,500. Bronx, 13,400. Like, these numbers all in that dense area is astronomical. Like, and that's what we're not seeing that here.
No, we're not seeing that at all.
It's easy for us to look at Allegheny County and be like, oh, like 150 total cases, like, big deal.
Yeah, I mean, you know, our city is not even close to as packed together as it is there. You know, it's, I'm not saying we don't have, you know, the homeless population and all that kind of stuff, but I mean, it's not even close to New York, you know, and you know, that kind of stuff is just going to make it spread so much faster. You know, I mean, those people have nowhere to go.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and Philadelphia is seeing the, like, close to those types of numbers, but not to that degree. But it's because it's close to the city.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what is it? You know, what's making it happen in these certain areas, too? You know, I mean, what's the common...
Population density.
Well, yeah, true.
And just, you know, if you and I could spread it to 10 people a day just by going out in public, think about there. What are you, hundreds?
Yeah, easy. On any given day, especially depending on what time of year it is, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Who really knows? But it is crazy where that's going. That's for sure. Moving towards, like, back to the what is normal discussion, do you think we're going to see regulatory stuff? From a, like, social standpoint, I doubt we'll see regulatory changes in day-to-day life long term. From, like, businesses like yours, and even restaurants and stuff, do you think that you'll see different changes that are going to come into play from regulatory standpoint?
Well, I'm sure a lot of people that are in the same business I'm in might not like this answer, but I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's time for them to step up and pay a little more attention to what's going on out there. You know what I mean? And, mm-hmm. you know, like I said earlier, some people need to be told what to do. And, you know, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you already mentioned that you have some things that you want to do for your shop to make changes long term. So, like, I'm assuming some of those might be like, all right, well, your family can come, but they wait in the waiting room or something like that.
Well, most of the time we try to keep it that way anyway, but, you know, if we can limit the amount of people being in the shop just for no reason, you know, we're going to try to do that.
Okay. I think that's an easy enough straight answer.
Special, you know, we're not going to, like, you know, tell them they can't come in, but, you know, if it starts to be too big of a group, we will explain the situation. You know, we're not just going to be like, look, you can't come in. You know, we're usually pretty good at explaining what's going on, and most people are responsive as long as you approach them in the right way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, I mean, add that to one more skill you got to have on your resume is you got to be able to read people in a moment's notice and see how do I handle this person? You know, do they need to be talked to strictly, or do they need to be talked to friendly?
That's the, you know, I would say that's one of the things, you know, the Florida carny in me, I guess, you know, I'm pretty good at, you know,
yeah. So
it helps, you know, to be able to read people and definitely know when you have to be a certain type of person and when you don't have to be a certain type of person. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That skill comes into play all over the place, so.
Oh, without a doubt.
All right, I skipped over one, but you had already said that you had some stuff in your savings, and that was going to, at least in the short term, help carry you and your business through this little mess. But there's a whole bunch of stuff through different government entities, Small Business Association, etc., with all types of programs for small businesses to help them out through this. And, like, it seems like they're all loans.
Yes.
Does something like that help you, hurt you, make no difference to you? You know, have you pursued anything like that? Do you plan to?
As of now, I don't plan to. I'm one of those people that I would prefer to do it on my own if I can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would rather that money go to someone that really needs it, you know, and I don't feel I'm in the position to where I really need it. And if I did, then, you know, I would look into it. But, you know, I'm not just going to take it because somebody's offering.
I understand. And especially, like, I've seen, like, loans or lines of credit, you know, it's all the same thing at the end of the day. It's,
you're going to pay for it. And you've already paid for it in taxes anyway, so it doesn't really
matter. Yeah. But, like, the biggest concern to me, and I'm fairly certain my employer is looking into them just because we have a lot of people. You know, we don't have a lot of people in our office, but, like, globally, we have a handful out in Washington. We have some people in North Dakota. We have some people that run service jobs out of our building. So they're not in our building, but they work for us.
Gotcha.
But, you know, I would say we probably have 25 to 50 people at any given point in time. So I know that my company is looking for some sort of assistance through this. But
that's the group of people I think it's for. Businesses like that, you know?
The concern I would have for anyone looking at these is, all right, let's just say, because it's a nice, easy number, that they're going to offer you a $100,000 line of credit, right? And you're like, all right, well, I'm going to start pulling from this for payroll, or I'm going to start, you know, paying my rent with this. That's a cool number if you're going a month and a half, 2 months.
Exactly.
If this starts to push out, do you keep burying yourself in debt? That they'll keep giving you the line of credit, but what interest rates, and, like, what's, you know, in the big picture, that's what scares me about all these small business loans.
A lot of people are going to get rich off of this, and that's the unfortunate side to any tragedy. You know, there's people that are set up in places to feed off of this, you know, and that they wait for these opportunities. And I understand the businesses that have to do it. And like I said, if I ever find my place to where I feel we need to do that, I'll do it, you know, because I have employees too, and I do need to, you know, make sure everybody's taken care of. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, if I got to use my last dime to take care of everybody, I will. You know, that's...
Like that's you said, you're a family.
Yeah. Definitely. You know, like, you know, you know, like, people aren't really counting on us other than to make them feel good and give them something they want. You know,
mm-hmm.
so our business is different. You know, it isn't like, you know, we have a bunch of people out there depending on us to come up with a drawing or this or that. It's going to, you know, affect all these other people.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're in one of those weird places. You know, it's like, it almost makes you feel like, you know, I don't want to be last in line as far as what comes back on, but I understand that, you know, our types of businesses aren't right now that important, you know, and I hate to say that, but they aren't, you know,
mm-hmm.
what I mean, in the whole scheme of things as far as everything that's going on.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it's kind of funny in a way when you, like, you see the essential, non-essential labels and you're like, oh, great, I'm in the non-essential department, cool.
Yeah.
But
I mean, honestly, I mean, you know, the good thing is, you know, what I do and what a lot of other people do that are in the same trade is, you know, we create art, and I've been doing it almost every day that I've been home, and I'm not getting paid for it. That's just the type of what I do. You know, I'm going to do it anyway. You know, whether I was homeless on the street drawing on the pavement or if someone's paying me to draw on their skin, you know what I mean? It's just in me, so I know it'll come. You know what I mean? Like, I have the type of trade that I can always use as a barter system. You know, if the apocalypse happens, every apocalypse movie I've ever seen, people have tattoos.
Yeah.
So I think I'll be all fine. You know what
I mean? As long as you like doing cool tribal ones.
That's it. Hey, I can adapt. I can go back to the 80s and 90s, man.
Just tribaled out.
Oh, man, I did so much tribal in Florida. It gives me nightmares.
Sounds about right.
A bunch of them popped up.
That's funny. Have you learned anything through this that you didn't expect to? Either about yourself, about business, anything like that? The world, maybe?
I wouldn't say I really learned anything, but I definitely see how unprepared we are for a lot of things, and that's kind of scary, because when I was younger, I always assumed America was ready for everything, you know, and we're being shown every day we're really not ready for anything at this point, you know what I mean? It seems like it, you know, if it gets worse, you know, I mean, I hope it doesn't, but if it gets worse, just imagine what it's going to be like, you know what I mean? I mean, we're barely coping, most people, how it is now.
Mm-hmm.
So if something really major comes down the pike, I just don't see us making it. You know what I mean? People are crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I've learned a little bit through it, but it's more about just like I've researched a handful of things that I maybe would have never looked into before. And that,
like what? What'd you look into?
Just different, like, disease mechanisms, like how they spread. And, like, I've been really following, not because I think I really need to, but just I find it kind of interesting at the same time, the medical side of it. So I've been, like, watching a lot of stuff from the main doctor guy, Dr. Fauci, that's been doing a bunch of stuff. But I also think it ties in interestingly with, like, my history of allergies and everything, too.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
So, I've been interested in that. The business tie-ins, I think a lot of people at the grassroots level never realized how tied in everything is, where, like, when you talk about non-essential businesses and you're like, well, why is this place still open? Well, because they provide all the stuff to this place that all need to be open. You're like, okay, so shutting down is not really shutting down. I can't really tell you what the difference is between when they shut down non-essential businesses and then gave us a stay-at-home order. There's, like, no difference.
There is no difference, and it's just another way, I think, for them to act like they're telling us something. You know what I mean? To make people feel like they're hearing something. I really don't know, and I mean, it's kind of, in a way, it's not a joke, because it isn't, but it is. You know what I mean? Just telling people to stay home and wash your hands, I get all that, that's great, but I mean, you need to explain to people why, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Give us some answers, give us some, like, hard facts, you know? Like, you know, these commercials just, they're so vague, you know? I mean, they tell you more about cars and car commercials than they do about the coronavirus, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, man, you know, I need to know a little bit more information, you know? And break it down for people that don't understand, because not everyone has the accessibility to the computer or even knows how to find out this information. So they need to explain to these people, because if they don't know, they're going to go out and do these things.
Do you know who Trevor Noah is? The Daily Show guy?
Yeah, definitely.
He has a really good interview with that Dr. Fauci right now. That, it, you know, it gives him that, like, slower pace to actually talk about what's going on and, like, how it all correlates to itself without immediately being asked ridiculous, stupid questions by the press.
Gotcha. I'll have to check that out.
So, yeah, that one I thought was really good. There's a couple good interviews. There's even some good discussion on Matt Smith has a podcast, Different Spokes, and usually it's BMX related.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I've seen it.
He has a recent one. It's like 30 minutes long, and it's with his girlfriend who works in the medical industry, and it's just like, you know, they're talking about what you're not putting together is when they're talking about these ventilators and what the ventilator is, they're like, when you're talking about someone that's on life support and you're talking about pulling the plug, it's that ventilator.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. That's how close to death you are with this disease, and people don't get it.
They don't. You know, and this is a horrible thing to say, and, you know, it seems like for some reason they like to do this in this country, but, you know, they need to show us pictures, man. That's the way you're going to get the point across. You need to scare people sometimes, and it's horrible, but it's the truth, you know, and that's the only way you're going to get some people to understand is you got to show them the truth, you know, put it in their face, you know, don't make it, like, not a big deal, you know. It is a big deal, you know, and they need to understand it's a really big deal. This is how big of a deal it is.
Yeah, well, and, I mean, realistically, like, take the false hope thing out that they keep doing, like,
I agree.
Oh, 2 more weeks, 14 days, whatever. And you're like, look, if that's not realistic, like, anyone that's operating a small business or even major business, like, if it's going to be 3 months, everyone needs to be able to plan accordingly, because I'm sure yours and my plans for 2 weeks of shutdown is a lot different than 3 months.
Oh, without a doubt, you know. I agree, you know, and that's why I wish they would just come across and just say, this is what it's going to be, you know. You have to stay home for this amount of time.
Yeah.
Go in, there's no questions asked.
Yeah, there's no exceptions. There's no, like, middle ground stuff. There's, you know, you're going to have banks open. You're going to have the grocery store open, and you're going to have the pharmacies open.
That's it, man. You know, and I
a couple of the gas stations.
Yeah, we don't need all of them open. You know what I mean? There's enough Sheets around. They could just shut down the rest of them. Sheets will keep everybody.
Yeah, I don't think they're allowed to do the favoritism thing like that, but I would agree with you.
Well, it kind of seems like they already do the favoritism thing like that.
Yes, I know. But beyond those, like, there is not a need for, like, okay, I get maybe this company supplies ventilator parts or something like that. Like, let's talk on a piece-by-piece basis. But also, if you're making this, like, maybe you should be making stuff in-house.
Yeah. It's funny you say that. I've seen this one 3D printing company where the lady took all of her 3D printers home, and she's making masks from her, like, living room. It was pretty cool, you know what I mean? She's just printing them off all day.
Yeah.
That was her idea.
The mask thing right now is kind of interesting too, since they just told us they didn't order it, whatever that means, but they recommend we all wear masks.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Hopefully they're going to send us one in the mail.
Well, then you see a bunch of companies like, oh, we're going to make and sell masks now. And you're like, on one hand, like, cool, but on the other, are you just really profiteering off of this right now?
You know, I feel if anyone right now gets caught doing that, and this is just my feeling, that they should come in and take your business and make it mandatory that now you're making it for everybody, mm-hmm. not just the profit. And I'm not saying take your business, but if you're going to be making things and jacking up the price or doing all these things, there's got to be some type of, repercussions,
I mean? I'm not even talking price gouging, though. I'm just saying, I have the capability. If I just start doing, if I started doing Grindworks masks because I could, right?
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
There's inherently something wrong with that in my mind.
I agree with you.
And that's, for multiple reasons. And I'm going to go back to Matt Smith and his podcast, another one that he put out. But he's talking about he shut down his Yeah store right now. Because he's like, look at, I sell a lot of stuff. I could be doing this. I don't think it's right. I don't think it is fair for me to be, clogging up the postal service and the shipping people to have to expose them to something that maybe I contaminated the box or the product, or, the person it's going to maybe contaminates them, and just all of the interconnected workings of this. He's like, I don't need to be shipping stuff right now. I'll just shut the store down for now. And I thought that was a cool and interesting perspective.
That's awesome. I mean, I wish there was a lot more people like that. I mean, you can tell that's a person that is definitely looking at the whole picture and not just, looking at himself. You know what I mean?
I think he's also in the perfect situation with that, too. I would say he's in the same situation that Grindworks is, where, I could just stop doing whatever I do today, and it's not going to impact anyone but myself. And it's not that I use Grindworks, or he probably uses the Yeah to make money. We use it to do cool things, and it's a platform to do cool things. So if we can't do cool things right now, then so be it.
Yeah, I get you. I get what you're saying.
But, it doesn't have, repercussions anywhere.
Yeah. But I know I have seen quite a few companies now making masks and putting them up for sale. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've also seen a bunch of people doing it in their neighborhood, and, they'll make them for everyone, and there is no sale.
But that's what I was going to say. If you're going to do that, if you're trying to sell product, give it away with product.
Yeah.
Don't try to, don't sell it as a fashion statement or something. It's almost like, look, I'm wearing this cool mask. That's fucked up. Mm-hmm. What I mean? I don't really like that.
Yeah, I agree. I also think this is going to lead into my next question, but I saw a meme, I think it was yesterday, but it was man, I really like seeing everyone out without gloves and masks on. It's like they're just raw dogging life right now. But I thought it was funny, but that's... My question is, do you see anything positive in this whole mess? And I'm going to say, all the memes have been a good little positive, even though they're not. And I think everyone has the opportunity to learn something through this.
I agree. I think there's going to hopefully be a lot of positives. Besides, the obvious downsides. Hopefully we'll just see that we definitely need to work together as people instead of everyone trying to be in it for your own, well-being. I mean, I get that. You gotta care for yourself and you gotta care for your family. But, all of us here are guests. We're only here for a small amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to make this time, matter, instead of just wasting it. It seems like we just wasted on so many just frivolous things instead of worrying about each other. And I think this might bring us back to worrying about each other a little bit. Hopefully people start calling each other a little bit more, start, talking to old friends. If anything, I think it's going to do that. It's going to bring some people back together. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do too. I think that's a pretty important one in the big picture. I'm gonna say pretty much like, are you selling gift cards or anything right now? Are you doing stuff that like people can help support the shop, or are you pretty much shut down?
You know, I thought about it, but it was one of those things. You know, it was kind of like what we were just talking about. It's like, you know, do I really need to be pushing gift cards right now? You know, there comes a point where I feel I need to. Maybe my mind will change. But, you know, right now, I want people to be worried about, you know, just staying safe and healthy. You know what I mean? Not worrying about buying gift cards or when their next tattoo is coming. I mean, that is something to look forward to, but man, we got to get past this first, you know?
Yep. No, I think that's awesome. Now if someone called you up and wanted one, you'd sell it to them, I'm guessing, anyway.
You know, to be honest,
Or just be like, "Hold, dude, we'll be here."
I think I would probably tell them to like try back in a month or so and see where we're at, you know what I mean? And it depends on the person. If it was like a personal friend or somebody that I've tattooed over the years a lot that I know, of course I'm probably gonna get them a gift card, you know what I mean? But to the general public, if you're just contacting me through, you know, social media or whatever, you know, I'm gonna tell you to definitely contact us in a month or so, you know, when we feel it's appropriate, because I hate to sell people gift cards not knowing when I'm gonna be back in business. You
I think
know,
that's
it's
fair.
almost, you know, it's kind of, that sucks, you know, and in a way it kind of backs, I mean, we get money, but in a way it backs us up because we're already going to be backed up with people. And if we have more people coming in that the money's in the bank and been gone, you know, that doesn't really help me in the long run, you know?
Yep. Gotcha. All right. Well, that pretty much wraps up anything that I had planned for us. I think we bounced around a little bit back and forth, bikes to tattoos and anything else. You got anything else you wanted to talk about? Anything you want to shout out? Drop your Instagram names? Anything like that?
Not really, man. You know, I kind of stay a little low key. You
All right, all right.
know, I appreciate the interview. You know, if I think of anything good, I'll contact you and maybe we'll do it again.
All right. Yeah, that's cool.
Maybe we can talk once I get back to business. You know what I mean?
I'll put your it's just at Mantis Tattoo, right? That's the shop Instagram. Okay.
That's it.
So I'll tag that in the post itself for this.
Cool.
But yeah, no, I appreciate your time. We're pushing about an hour and a half right now, so
Wow.
went quick, right?
Yeah, it did. It's almost like talking to anybody just sitting down, not tattooing them.
did you feel like your hands needed to be doing something?
In my mind, I'm tattooing you right now. I've been tattooing your forehead the whole time.
Right, cool. I got a lot of blank canvas up here, you know?
Yeah, no, I've been looking at it. I've changed my mind a few times, but I got a few go-to designs if you ever decide.
All right, well, you know there's no hair follicles there, right? It's just straight up, like, smooth head.
That makes it even better.
I know, that's just make you think, though.
Hair follicles hurt when you tattoo over them. Oh man, they suck.
Do they?
Oh, bad.
Interesting.
Any of the stuff along like my jawline or like my hairline, oh man, it's a different feeling. It's not cool.
I'm sure there's hair follicles there, but my hair doesn't grow, I guess is the short way of putting that.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. You know what I mean? We're pretty
Yeah.
much the same gang.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong.
Mine fell out in sixth grade, and that's, I just wake up looking the same every day.
I had decent hair until about 45, and then I had cancer for a little while, man, and it just
I
never
do, I
really came
remember
back.
that.
Yeah, it never really came back, you know what I mean? So I'm cool with that. I
Yeah.
just don't have to go shave as much.
Yeah. No, that's But, you know, sixth grade was a rough time for that to all go down and lose your hair because everyone's just jerks. But
yeah, I can see that.
I think it's also, like, a pretty good indicator of why my demeanor is so, like, I don't really care. Because...
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to be, man. You know what I mean?
I mean, you after a while, you just can't care anymore. You're just like, yep, whatever, this is where I'm at. But, at least now I look at it as like, man, I don't have to go through that later in life.
I agree.
It's just done.
It was hard for me in the beginning because it was a little later in life, but, you know, it's all right. It wasn't like I had a mullet or anything, so, you know, I kept it pretty short to begin with.
If mine ever grew back for whatever weird reason, I would have to run through the gamut of weird hairstyles, so just to do it.
Just to have them.
Yep.
I had a really nice mullet around, I would say, oh man, probably about 1990, 1989. I had a pretty good mullet. It was pretty sweet right around that time.
It's good, good. I like the irony of the comment of a sweet mullet or a nice mullet, but I know what you mean.
Oh, it was a good one, man. You know, I looked like pretty much all of the guys from Dorkin and York. You know what I mean? All the Flatland guys, all in one. All those haircuts in one deal.
That's awesome.
Yeah, someday I'll show you pictures.
All right, I'm going to wrap this up, but, like, hang on for a minute after I close this down. I'm just going to stop the recording, though. Anyway, thanks for checking out another episode. Make sure you check out Mantis Tattoo on Instagram and the work on that page, both from Carlise and the rest of the crew. Also, make sure if you're just finding this for the first time, hit up Grindworks_BMX on Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, and GrindworksBMX without the underscore on Facebook, Mixer, TikTok. There's others. I don't know. You'll see them in a minute when I put up the ending screen. Anyway, thanks again, Carlise. I'll talk to you in a second.
Thanks, man. Have a good night.
Yeah.